Good evening. I'm Joan DeBardleben, the director of the Center for European Studies here at Carleton, and I'd like to welcome you. We thought we were taking a bit of a risk having the lecture at 5:30 in the evening, right at dinner time, and talking about, or at least coming up toward dinner time. I guess most of you don't eat that early, but you're probably thinking about dinner, if you're like me, right when we're talking about food. So we're very glad that you have come, and we hope that we will stimulate your appetite for the topic that we're talking about today. I just want to give you a little bit of context of what we're doing. This lecture today is part of our annual series called the Canada-Europe Public Lecture. It's run by the Center for European Studies at Carleton, which is a European Union Center of Excellence. It's supported by a grant from the European Commission, and as well as by Carleton University. It's our effort every year to pick an interesting, perhaps provocative topic that is of interest to the public at large. And I think my assessment is we've succeeded, because I think I see a lot of people from off campus here, and I want to issue a special welcome to you. The title of the talk you'll learn about in a moment, because I'm going to introduce my colleague who's going to introduce the speaker. But just to welcome you to our lecture, we also are going to have another lecture in the series by the Center for European Studies on March the 9th. We have a whole series of talks about Europe. If you're interested, you can sign up at the door outside. Our next event will be on reducing the democratic deficit, lessons from Scandinavia and Europe by Professor Henry Milner, who's a visiting professor in Sweden as well as a professor at the University of Montreal. That's on March the 9th at 3 p.m. So there is a poster. I think it's outside as well. But please do sign up for our list of events, because I think you'll find possibly other things you're interested in. I just want to mention that today's lecture is part of a workshop, a two-day workshop, which is occurring tomorrow and Saturday, which is actually sponsored by another project of our center, which is called the Canada-Europe Transatlantic Dialogue. And these two projects are working together to put forward this rich program. The Canada-Europe Transatlantic Dialogue is funded by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, and its purpose is to get research findings out to the public, to practitioners, to people who can use it. And so that project is sponsoring this larger workshop, which has brought other guests from Europe, as well as from across Ontario and perhaps other parts of Canada. I'm not sure if all of our Canadians are from Ontario or not, but
and Quebec.
So that workshop, unfortunately, the registration has been closed for that workshop because there's been such a high demand. We do have a waiting list. I'm not sure whether we're still taking people on the waiting list or not, but if you're interested, you can speak to us afterwards. So welcome again, and now I'll introduce my colleague, Professor Peter Andre from the Department of Political Science. He's been the main driver of this event, and we're very grateful to him for doing that. He has a rich set of contacts and knowledge on the topic, and therefore has been able to draw excellent people to this whole larger event. His own area of interest lies mainly in environmental and international and Canadian environmental politics, and his book, which was published in May 2007, deals with the topic of global politics of regulating genetically modified crops and food. And so he will now introduce our speaker. So thank you.
Thank you, Joan, and thank you to all of you who are here today for this exciting lecture. And I'm actually quite excited about the event that we actually have coming out of this for the next couple of days. As Joan mentioned, the purpose of the Transatlantic Dialogue is really to start some dialogue and discussion between academics and the policy community and practitioners, and then also to build these bridges, particularly between Europe and Canada, on issues that we have in common and how we look at them in similar ways and look at them in different ways. And I started experiencing the whole vibe this afternoon when we had three guests from Europe, and I were, including Jan Dawa, who's going to give the talk, we're having coffee this afternoon and already starting to learn about the similarities and differences between the agri-food system change that's happening in this country and how it compares with other parts of the world. And in fact, the reason that of the various people who are here for this workshop for the next couple of days, we chose Jan Dawa van der Ploeg from Wageningen University in the Netherlands to give this opening keynote talk and at the same time this Canada-Europe lecture is to, because he brings to this topic, well, many years of working in the area of rural sociology and rural development, not only in the Netherlands, but really all around the world. He is currently a chair at the Chancellor's Chair at Wageningen University in the Netherlands, which is the big agricultural college in the Netherlands, and which has a very strong rural sociology component, and he's sort of a key driver at that department. But he also has a professorship in China, at a university in China. He has very strong working relationships with universities in Brazil. And I gather from his willingness to come here, as well as people like Terry Marsden, who's come from Cardiff, and Maria Fonte, who's come from Napoli in Italy, they're also very interested in learning, you know, bringing some of their knowledge that they've worked on from Europe and around the world, and kind of seeing how it fits with what's happening in Canada and what can be learned from for our unique approach to working on some of these food system issues here in this country. So maybe that's all I'll say, because I'm looking forward to the talk. I first saw Jan give a presentation at the European Society for Rural Sociology in 2007, and I really liked the way that he wove together his international experience around peasant and farmer issues with, at that time, the European context, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from that big picture overview when we start thinking about the Canadian context as well. So the title of Jan's talk is Rebuilding Local Food Systems in an Era of Empire and Globalization, Lessons from the EU and Beyond. And I should also put in a plug that Professor Dawa has a book called The New Peasantries. That was out in 2008. And part of this title actually comes from the subtitle of that book, I believe, which looks at empire and globalization. And so without further ado, thank you for coming all the way from Wageningen.
Thank you very much, Peter, for your nice introductory words. Thank you, Joan, as well. I'm very happy that I can be here, that I've been invited to give this lecture, this Canada-Europe lecture. I'm also very happy that I can participate tomorrow and the day after tomorrow in this important, I think, policy workshop on local, sustainable local food systems. So I'm a happy man. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the issue I will address this evening indeed is about local food systems, and I will focus especially on the construction of new markets, which is very closely tied with the emergence of new food systems. On the one hand, it's very self-evident that there is this combination of new food systems and new markets. On the other hand, it's a phenomenon that has often been neglected and it has hardly been theorized. This is due to a particular fact, I think. Both the construction of local food systems and the associated construction of new markets is, at least in Europe and I think in many other places in the world, an expression of social struggle. It's an expression of resistance. It's an expression of the struggle to keep family farming moving. Now, and this is precisely the issue that makes it difficult to theorize. If you look to the classical theories from the left, then it goes that it has been the realm of production that has always been understood as the cradle of social struggle, and that now social struggle is moving to the realm of circulation, constructing new markets, is a somewhat uneasy phenomenon. Yeah, the more so since the left always has distrusted the market. On the right side of the equation, there is a similar uneasiness. That is that, let's say, in most theories, the market is seen as a given. The market simply is the market, and the market should not be altered through political and social intervention, let alone that it should be changed through social struggle. So from both sides of the equation, the construction of new markets represents a somewhat uneasy phenomenon that has hardly been theorized. Nonetheless, I think it's a very important phenomenon, and I will discuss it at some length. First of all, I will give you three contextual elements. The first is the squeeze on agriculture that emerged from the midst of the 1980s onwards, with stagnating revenues, the gross value of production being stabilized in most countries, whilst the costs of production kept growing. This has been combined from the beginning of this century, the beginning of this decade onwards, by deregulation, by which in the end resulted in a huge volatility of the main agricultural and food markets. We all have been familiarized with the price hikes followed by deep and steep decreases in price levels. For many farms and for many agricultural sectors as a whole, this has meant the sudden introduction of negative cash flows. It's important to note that both the squeeze on agriculture and this volatility that's now being combined with it are strongly related to the dominance of food empires, the huge networks that increasingly control the production, but also the processing, the circulation, the distribution, and even the consumption of food. And on the other hand, it also implies that these two phenomena together, the squeeze on agriculture and the volatility, the increased volatility, increasingly imply that it is impossible, and this is very important, it's impossible to reproduce farming as an economic activity through the main markets only. Yet the market is not anymore the main circuit for reproduction. It blocks it. The more so since, and it's the third element, this agrarian crisis increasingly is interacting with the general economic and financial crisis. There is a reshuffling of the price regimes. Prices of credit and of feed and fodder and of energy will for sure go up. They are already rising. And especially the farms, the large-scale specialized farms tuned precisely to the previous price regime, are entering everywhere in the world in very deep, troubles. Now, this triple crisis has produced several responses. These are one of these responses, and I underlined that it's just one, but it's a main response. One of these responses has been the emergence, the construction of new local food systems. And I will illustrate this with the following diagram. The construction of local food systems essentially is about shifting boundaries. Take the internal triangle as a representation of conventional agriculture, specialized, large-scale, competitive, till a certain moment. Then it are processes that roll over the border of this conventional farm enterprise and establish a new reality. It are three processes, being mainly deepening, which refers to the on-farm processing, to the creation of short circuits for direct selling, to organic production, to high-quality products, to regional specialities. It's all about adding more value added to each unit of production. On the other side, there are processes of broadening, that is about embedding farming, strict food production, in a wider range of economic activities like energy production, water retention, like agrotourism, like nature and landscape maintenance. There's a wide range, a wide repertoire of that. And the third process at the bottom is referred to, especially in Europe, as regrounding. That is, instead of grounding farming on all kind of external resources, there is a return to local ecosystems, using the locally available resources as foundation for farming. Now, my general point is that the construction of local sustainable food systems not only regards the right side of this triangle, but critically entails also a processes of broadening, that is embedding farming in far more economic activities, and it's about regrounding farming on locally available resources, that is on amongst them the local ecosystem. To give you a little bit of flavor of a European flavor of all this, let me show you a few examples. This one is about, it is a father and a mother in the north of the Netherlands. Behind them are the buildings of their farm. What they are doing here is essentially using the opportunities that are entailed in the territory. This is in the Lake District of the north of the Netherlands in Friesland. There is a huge flow of sailing ships, of yachts passing by. What they did, and it was very innovative at that time, is create a small harbor alongside their farm. You see it in the background. So people stay there overnight. They combined it with an on-farm shop. They combined it with a camping site, with luxury apartments, with some other recreational facilities. This is about Brazil. This guy represents his experience, I should say, the richness of cultural repertoire that's being revitalized. He is a descendant of Italian immigrants, and he is using the culinary tradition and the knowledge of his grandmother and his own mother to convert the tomatoes into pastas and juices that are sold on local markets. Example from Italy itself. This is very clever, using new technologies. I cannot go into details now, but using new technologies, milk is being pasteurized and being embottled in Tetra Pak on farm. As a matter of fact, it's a group of cooperating farms. The equipment is mobile and then sold at places where a lot of people come together, in schools, in railway stations, very important in and you can go on. Another, just adding a bit of flavor to it, these are three young farmers from the Netherlands. Together with thousand other farmers, they have created what we call a territorial cooperative that's very active in the management of biodiversity, the management of landscape, and more generally, they turn their territory into a space for self-regulation. They fight government-imposed regulations. They say, well, we have the knowledge, we have the ambition to do it ourselves. Completely new solutions emerged out of that. This is also then about, well, one aspect of new local food systems. At the same time, these guys are involved in what I refer to as regrounding activities, cleverly using the cycles that are inherent to dairy farming, especially making better manure that revitalizes soil biology, thus improving the productivity, thus introducing less stress into the cattle, resulting into better product qualities. And it's notable, this does not only improve the farm economy, but also at the territorial level, this kind of rebalancing of the process of production translates into major advantages at the level of the territory as a whole. More employment, better incomes, better maintenance of resources. This final one is designed just to indicate a little bit the ample array of possibilities. It's about the combination of water retention, very important in northwest of Europe, with dairy farming, with energy production, with some recreational opportunities. Yeah, this is to indicate that there is still a lot of new designs emerging. Now, this has been happening for many years already. The important point is that it has for a long time been in the margin. The expert systems, the dominant expert systems, that gather statistical information, the official views, it are the ministries of agriculture, etc., considerable parts of the agriculture universities, have been nearly blind for these new developments. That is due to two phenomena. There is a strong cohesion between the existing knowledge systems and institutions. The one builds on the other. There is no contradiction. There is no critical debate. It's simply repetition. The other point is what we call structural equivalence. They all focus on the same definition of what is relevant and what is irrelevant. They focus on what is considered to be the global food system. They focus on what is supposed to be competitive at world market level and everything that happened around it.